We're holding the top line of Yod Amud Aleph. We started talking yesterday about Machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, where rain comes from. And of course, you know, like any Machlokas in Torah, there's, you know, Eilu Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, and there's aspects of both of them that are, correct. Anyway, so now we're going to talk about more about rain, about rain as far as Eretz Yisrael versus other countries, and then we're going to get back to the machloekas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So, Tanan Rabbanan, Eretz Yisrael nivra tchila. Eretz Yisrael was created first, v'chol ha'olam kula nivra l'vasoif, and the rest of the world was created afterwards, which we had a machloekas about that in Yuma, actually. We had an opinion that the world was created from the middle, from Evanshia, and we had a different opinion that it was created from the edges first. Anyway, we're going according to our Brais over here is going according to the opinion that Hashem first created Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Adloi osa Eretz v'chutzos, before Hashem made the land and the outlying areas. So the land over here means Eretz Yisrael, and chutzos, the outlying areas, means the rest of the world. So we see according to that, Hashem made Eretz Yisrael. There's noise over there, if you don't mind muting yourself. Next, Eretz Yisrael Mashka Oisa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmai. Eretz Yisrael Hashem provides rain for by himself, as we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, that rain is one of the things that Hashem doesn't delegate to a Shliach. V'chol Ha'olam Kula Yidei Shliach, the rest of the world gets rain through a Shliach. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Hanoisim Motar Al Pnei Oretz, Hashem gives rain on the face of the earth, V'sheleach Mayim Al Pnei Chutzos, and he sends water to the outlying areas. So again, Eretz means Eretz Yisrael. The outlying areas, Chutzos, means the rest of the world. And Marsha points out also, the fact is, we're not describing the what comes to the rest of the world as Motar, which is rain, because we said before that rain is something that Hashem himself does and doesn't delegate to a Shliach. Rather, we're describing it as Mayim, as water. So therefore, the implication is that it can be through a Shliach. There are various places in Chassidus it talks about. In particular, there are some places where the Tzemach Tzedek explains that the shliach in this place is Malach Matat. So in other words, the idea is, in Eretz Yisrael, it goes directly without any shliach, without even being filtered through Matat. Whereas when it comes to the other countries in the world, then they also, ultimately, the key of rain is in Hashem's hands, like we said at the beginning of the Masechta, but Hashem, so to speak, filters it down through us, to us, through Malach Matat. Anyway, continues the Braisa. Eretz Yisrael shows a meg shamim. Eretz Yisrael drinks the actual rainwater that comes from Hashem directly. The rest of the world only gets the overflow. Shenemar, again, the same pasuk, Hanoisin Matar Al Pnei Oretz. So the implication is that Hashem gives rain on the Oretz, on Eretz Yisrael, and then everybody else gets the mayim, everybody else gets the outflow from Eretz Yisrael. Also, Eretz Yisrael shoyts etchila. Eretz Yisrael gets the first drink of rain. V'chol olam kulo l'vasoif, and the rest of the world gets only afterwards. Again, shenema hanosin matar al pnei aretz. The same pasuk implies that first those Eretz get the rain, and then the rest of the world. Now that seems to be the same thing as the previous one, where we said that Eretz Yisrael gets meg shamim, and everybody else gets the tamsis. There is actually an explanation. The Gvura Sari talks about that maybe the previous one, when we said Eretz Yisrael shoyts meg shamim v'chol ha'olam kulo mitamtzis, maybe we don't mean the tamtzis, maybe we don't mean the overflow from Eretz Yisrael, but rather the overflow from Gan Eden, which we're going to describe soon in the Gemara, that the whole world is only a tiny fraction of Gan Eden, and therefore, like, the whole rest of the world can get the overflow from Gan Eden, whereas Eretz Yisrael gets rain directly. Eretz Yisrael gets rain directly from Hashem. So the Gemara says, Moshel, the Moshel that we're saying over here about how Eretz Yisrael gets first and everybody else gets the overflow, is La'odim Shem Gabal Sagvina, like a person who is making cheese. So he takes the food, he takes the actual block of cheese that he made and sets aside the psoilus, the whey, and the other things that are not necessary, and in the same way, like Hashem gives the good stuff to Eretz Yisrael, so to speak, and then what's left over goes to the rest of the world. Marsha points out that actually you have in cheese making, you have several different steps, and those reflect the different things that we just said about HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmai versus Al-Yidei Shliach, and Eretz Yisrael getting first and everybody else later, and so forth. Those are actually represented in the different stages of making cheese, And therefore, that's why the Braise uses that mashal for the perfect. Okay. Now, let's get back to, we said that we have the Machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, we learned yesterday, where Rabbi Eliezer holds that rain comes from water from the ocean that evaporates and forms clouds, and then it rains. And Rabbi Yeshua says that the clouds are basically a go-between for the Mayim Hel Yonim. You have water that comes from a storehouse in Shemayim, which goes down into the clouds, and then from there gets showered on the earth. So then we said, Rabbi Yeshua had asked Rabbi Eliezer, how could you say that it comes from evaporated water from the oceans? Aren't the oceans salty? And yet we see that plants grow on rainwater. They wouldn't be able to if it was salty. So Rabbi Eliezer had told him, Omama, we said in the Braisim, and Matkin Hain Ba'ovim, they become sweetened in the clouds, because when the water evaporates, only the water evaporates and the salt and other things get left behind. So the Gemara says, Manali, where does Rabbi Eliezer know that from? Now, of course, we would say to ourselves, what kind of question is that? Where do you know that from? Do an experiment and you'll see. But the Gemara, of course, is never satisfied with that kind of thing. We want a source in Torah for such a statement. So where do we have a pasuk that expresses this idea? That the water that evaporates to form the clouds, as Rabbi Eliezer is saying, gets sweetened in the process. So the Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, you have like this. There's two versions of David's Shira. You have Kapitel Yud Ches of Tehillim by David Lashem, that's called David Ashira Azois. You also have the same Shira near the end of Shmuel Beis. There's a number of differences between them. So here we're going to focus on one of those differences. So the Amr of Yitzchak by Yosef, Amr of Yechman. Ksiv, in Tehillim, in that song, it says, Cheshchas Mayim of a Shchokim. The darkness of water, the thickness of the Shchokim, where Shchokim is one of the levels of Shemayim. So we're talking about thick clouds. Uchtiv, and then you have a different pasuk in Shmuel when it has the same shira. Instead, the word is chashras ma'im of eshkakim. So chashras, we said that Rabbi Yeshua had understood the word chashras to mean that the clouds sprinkle water on the earth. That like instead of it coming down as like a bucket full of water, it comes divided into little drops. So now Rabbi Yochanan is saying, instead, what we do is we take those two words, cheshchas and chashras, and combine them together. Shkel chof b'shodi aresh, take the chof from the word cheshchas, which is the only letter that's different from chashras, combine it together with the resh, combine it together with the word chashras, v'kori bei chachshoras, and then you have the word chachshoras, where now you often have in droshes of Chazal, that we can allow a ches and a hey to interchange. They're shaped fairly similarly. They're pronounced somewhat similarly. We're talking about, you know, of course, a Saudi style ches back in the throat. Anyway, so that yields the word chachshoras, which is similar to hachshoras. Hachshoras means making kosher. So it means making it good, making it usable. So therefore, nichshoren and mismatkin, it says on the side of you from the oro, that the water becomes turned into something good, is turned into good water and sweetened. So that's where Rabbi Eliezer is getting, by combining together those two words from the psukim, that the water gets sweetened and then purified when it's purified. That's the word for it when it goes up to the clouds. Now, Rabbi Yeshua Bahani Kroi my Dorish Bu. Now, what is Rabbi Yeshua doing with those psukim? He who holds that the water to begin with is good water because it comes from the Mayim Hel Yonim. So the answer is Savalaki Ha Diki Osir Abdimi Omar. He holds like what Rav Dimi said when he came from Eretz Yisrael. He said, Amri B'mar Rava, they say in the west in Eretz Yisrael, Nahur Anoni, when the clouds are see-through or are translucent, Zeirin Mohi, then you have very little water in them. So the kind of clouds that are see-through are not the kinds that are going to produce very much rain. Choshuch Anoni, when you have dark, thick clouds, Sagin Mohi, then you have a lot of water coming from them. So in other words, because it says Cheshchas Mayim, therefore Rabbi Yeshua says, well, that's what it means. So when you have Cheshchas, when you have a darkness, dark clouds, then Mayim, then you're going to have a lot of water. And then, by implication, therefore, when it means the opposite, when the clouds are thin, then it means that you don't have very much rain from it. That's according to Rashi. Marsha says the fact is, in that case, we're still missing half of the statement, according to Rabbi Yeshua. So he says that Rabbi Yeshua would say that, on the other hand, the word chashras, which we said before, means like showering, like finer drops. That represents that kind of thing. When you have finer clouds, thinner clouds, and all you get from them are tiny drops of rain. So therefore, you do have both halves of it over here. Chashras, the darkness, which produces dark clouds, which produce a lot of rain, and the chashras, the thinner clouds which produce only showers, only drizzles of rain. Okay. The Gemara says, Keman Ozla Hodatanya, which opinion, according to which opinion is the following Braisa? Mayim Hel Yonim Mayim Rahim Tzloyim. The upper waters that are in Shemayim, again, on the second day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, Hashem separated the lower waters from the upper waters and put the Rakia in between. So Mayim Ha'Yonim and Mayim Ha'Hein Tzvuyim, they are suspended in the air by Hashem's word, which means, in other words, the vote is, Marashah says like this, you have in Parashas Bereishis, on the second day, it says Hashem created the Rakia. Now, when you think, so he explains the Rashi on the Pasuk over there as follows. That you have the Rakia is supposed to be in the middle over there, exactly between the Mayim Oyonim and Mayim Tachtonim. Now, obviously, the Mayim Tachtonim don't reach up all the way to the Rakia. The Mayim Tachtonim are in the lakes and oceans and whatnot here on Earth, and you have a considerable distance between them and the Rakia. By the same token, then, the Rakia itself has to be a considerable distance from the Mayim Oyonim. Not that the Mayim Oyonim are resting directly on the Rakia, but rather there's some distance above it, and the Rakia is just the separation between the zone of Mayim Oyonim and the zone of Mayim Tachtonim. So therefore, they're hanging there in the air by Hashem's word. There's nothing physical that Hashem created, so to speak, to support them. Upeda Sehen, and the Braisa continues, the fruit of that treasury of water that Hashem has, Megashamim, is the rain that falls down for us. So he's using a Lashon HaPasuk, Mipri Masecha Tispa Oretz, from the fruit, from the produce of your works, the earth is satisfied. So we're understanding that Masecha here means Shamayim, and therefore Pri Masecha would be the water that comes from Shamayim. Rashi also points out the reason why we call it Peiris, besides the Lashon HaPasuk, is because the point is, like we have in morning davening, Peiris saying, Ba'olam HaZeh V'Akeren Kayim Yisrael Olam Haba, saying that you have the Peiris of something implies that you still have the entire Keren intact. And that's how it is, in other words. So there's a reservoir of Mayim Elyonim. Then from it comes rain. Don't think that over time that reservoir of Mayim Elyonim is getting depleted by some of it coming down as rain. No, you always have that reservoir is always there, and then you have the peiros, the produce of it, more and more gets produced as time comes, and that overflow comes to us as rain. So shenemar b'prima secha tisba oretz, as the pasuk says, from the fruit of your works the earth will be satisfied. So Keman Rabbi Yeshua. So that's according to Rabbi Yeshua, who again says that rain comes from this reservoir of Mayim Elyonim. According to Rabbi Eliezer, on the face of it wouldn't work, because according to him, rain comes from water that comes from below. So Rabbi Eliezer, so what would Rabbi Eliezer answer to that? He says, Ahu b'maisi yodav, shal ha-kadosh b'ohu d'chtiv. Fine, that pasuk is talking generically about the things that Hashem made. It's not talking specifically about the rain that Hashem created. So basically, this machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, you know, we had in Rosh Hashanah, we had the machlokas between them, whether the world was created in Tishrei or in Nisan, where Rabbi Eliezer says in Tishrei, which is the time of year of Isarusa de la Sata, whereas Rabbi Yeshua had said Nisan, which is Isarusa de la Ela. So now we have the same kind of machlokas is reflected in what they're saying, where rain comes from. Is it primarily Isarusa de la Sata, water that evaporates from below and forms clouds, representing our avodah that goes up above and has effect l'mayla, or is it, as Rabbi Yeshua is saying, mainly a surusa d'layla, mainly it's Hashem sending down water from that storehouse of his in Shemayim. Okay. We said before that the whole rest of the world gets the tamsis, gets the overflow of rain from Eretz Yisrael, or according to the Gvura Sari, from Gan Eden. So let's talk about that a little. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the entire world drinks rain from the overflow of Gan Eden. You have a pasuk that describes a river comes out from Eden and waters the Gan. So we see by the same token, in other words, from the Gan itself, you have the, so in other words, you have a river that the only some of that is needed to water the Gan, because as the Gemara is going to say soon, the Gan is much smaller than Eden. Eden representing Gan Eden Elyon, the Gan representing Gan Eden Atachton. Anyway, so the point is, the world, the rest of the world then gets the overflow from Gan Eden Atachton. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Mitamtis base kur shows a tarka. What happens is, when you have a field that where you can plant a kur, which is 30 saw of grain, and the amount of water that's needed to water it, from the overflow of it, you can water another smaller field that grows only a tarkav, which is 3 kavim, half a saw. So in other words, it's a ratio of 1 to 60. Since we're going to say in a second that the ratio of the world to Gan Eden is also 1 to 60, so therefore it follows that the amount of rain, the amount of water that's needed to water Gan Eden Atachten, that is 1 60th of that, the tamsis, the overflow of that, will do for watering the entire world. That's what we mean, therefore, that the world gets from the tamsis of Gan Eden. So, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Mitzrayim, rather, have your Dalad Meis Parasa, Dalad Meis Parasa. The Mitzrayim is 400 by 400 Parasa. When 400 Parasa in modern terms is somewhere around 900 or 1,000 miles. And the modern country of Egypt, I think, is smaller than that, but it also includes, you know, or maybe it's larger than that, actually, whatever. It includes areas that aren't necessarily part of historic Mitzrayim. V'hu echad mishishim b'kush. Eretz Mitzrayim, in turn, is 1/60th of Kush. It's very possible over here that Kush means Africa as a whole. And if you measure Mitzrayim's 400 by 400 parasa and multiply it by 60, it would be vaguely about the size of Africa. But Kush echad mishishim ba'olam. In turn, Kush is 1/60th of the world. There, we'd have to say, I guess, that Kush is not Africa, because Africa is not, the continent in Africa is a lot bigger than 1/60th of the world. Okay. But Olam Echad Mishishim Began, the entire world is 1/60th the size of Gan. The Gan Echad Mishishim L'Eden, because again, Eden is a higher level. In fact, you have a Gemara elsewhere that points out Gan Eden, human eyes have seen, because Adam and Chava were there. But Eden, no creature, no human being, other than no human being has ever seen it. It's reserved only for Hashem. So it represents, of course, a much higher level of Gilead, of course. Anyway, so the Gan is 1/60th of that. The Eden Echad Misamach Gehenim, and in turn, that's 1/60th of Gehenim. Nimtza Kol Olam Kula Kikisu Kedar LeGehenim. So it comes out the entire world compared to Gehenim is only like a pot lid relative to a pot, a very tiny fraction of it. Because we're saying 1/60th of 1/60th of 1/60th, so it comes out a very tiny amount. V'yesh emim Gehenim ein l'shir. Some say that Gehenim has no shir, meaning Marsha says, in other words, there's nothing that you can say that such and such is such that Eden, for example, is a certain percentage of Gehenim. V'yesh emim Eden ein l'shir. Others say that Eden, the higher level of Gan Eden, has no shir again, meaning you can't really say that Eden is 1/60th of anything because it's infinite. Okay. So therefore, we see from that, in other words, we see from this that the world is 1/60th of Gan Eden, and therefore the flow that goes to water Gan Eden, just the tamsis of it is enough to water the entire world. Amar of Oshia might, now going back to, we're talking about rain, and we're talking about places that are better watered. Amar of Oshia, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk that talks about Babel, Sheikhant Amayim Rabim, you who dwell by many waters, because Babel was a well-watered area, Rabas Aitzoros, the one with tremendous treasuries, so me Godom, it means, me Godom the Babel, Shiro Aitzoseh, Malayas Bar, what caused that Babel has granaries and treasuries full of food, full of grain? In other words, that's a very fertile area, heavy rabim, because it lives, it dwells by many waters, meaning, in other words, as opposed to, for example, so actually what it is, first of all, as opposed to Eretz Yisrael, which doesn't really have, the only permanent river in Eretz Yisrael is the Yarden, Babel has the Chidekel on the Pras, but more to the point, Rashi says, the vote is, Babel is very low-lying. So therefore, not only it has the rain of its own rivers, but all the rain from surrounding areas flows down into it. It's lower than all the surrounding country. So therefore, it's very well watered. Therefore, it's much more fertile and much more the breadbasket of that part of the world than other similar countries. And in fact, Maharsha points out now that Rashi mentions over here that the last part of the pasuk says in context, this pasuk is part of a nevuah of Yirmiyahu, who's talking about how successful Babel has been and how it's going to be destroyed when its time comes. So he finishes off the pasuk, Bo kitzech amas bitzech. So Rashi quotes that without explaining what that's supposed to represent. Maharsha says it's hinting at the idea that eventually there's going to come a point when Babel is going to lose that advantage. Amas means like amas amayim, a water channel. Bitzeich is meloshin bitzoyim, and meloshin mud, meloshin swamps of mud. So there's going to come a point, the Navi is saying, when there's going to be the end, bitzeich of amas, of your water channels, and bitzeich of your swamps, and Babel, which is nowadays Iraq, is going to dry up. It happened, Omar Rab, so Rab says in this connection, Asira Babel is really rich. The Chatz, the Baloi Mitra, they're able to harvest without rain. In other words, they don't need rain because they're so well watered, as we said, by the rivers and by the inflow from other countries. Omar Abaya, and Abaya says in this connection, Naktinan, we have the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim, Tuvoni Veloi Yuvshoni. That Babel is Tuvoni, is a place where literally means where you sink. So where it's very muddy and swampy. Below Yuvshani, it's not dry. So in other words, according to Rashi, Abaya, who lived his whole life in Babel, is confirming what Rab says. That look how rich and fertile and moist and humid Babel is. That the ground over there is more swampy than dry in most places. On the other hand, Tosfos says, and the Oruch also says, what it means is that Abaya is saying a different statement. Better to be in a country which is moist and humid rather than in a country that's dry. In other words, as much as you might say, well, a country that's moist and humid, it's not very comfortable during the summer, and it's muddy and so forth, but it's still better off than living in a dry country. The Mishnah says, "Begim over Macheshvin Shoylan Sagshamin." On the third of Cheshvin, we start asking for rain. We're asking for rain means saying the same Tavamotar. So we had earlier, we had a few dafim ago a machloitus between a couple of different Tanoim. When is the time when it first starts raining in Eretz Yisrael? We had Rav Meir saying the third of the earliest is the third of Cheshvin. So therefore, according to him, that's also when you start asking for rain. Rav Gamliel says, rather, you start asking on the 7th of Cheshvan, Tesvav Yom Achar Achag, which is 15 days after the end of Yom Tov. So Shmini Atzeres is Chof Beis, and then they start traveling after that. Kadesh Yagia, Achron Shabbat Yisrael, the Nahar Pros, so that even the last Jew will be able to reach Nahar Pros. There are two ways of understanding that, by the way. Does it mean that they have to still be able to cross the Nahar Pros? And in that case, it means that you had people who are even coming from Babel on Aliyah L'Regel, or does it just mean that they have to be able to get as far as the Pros, which is the most distant border of Eretz Yisrael? And in that case, that would imply that only Jews from Eretz Yisrael came on Aliyah L'Regel. In any case, I mean, we did learn in that sugya a few blocks ago, that Rav Gamliel Taka was one of the opinions who said that the earliest expected time for rain is Zayin Cheshvan. So that can be a reason why he's saying to start Zayin Cheshvan. On the other hand, some of Farshim explain he might agree in principle that it should start earlier, but he's saying you should delay it by a few days in order that the people who are going to Nahar Pros don't get caught in the rain. A couple of places where they ever talked about in Sichas that you see from that, the Avas Yisrael that Jews in Eretz Yisrael are expected to have for Jews from elsewhere. Like this, you have, they desperately need rain as soon as possible. Really, they should be davening for it even right after Sukkot, and even during Sukkot, were it not for the fact that they don't want it to rain while they're in the Sukkah. But they delay for 2 weeks in order to give the last stragglers over there time to get home. Why do we wait till December? We'll talk about that now in the Gemara. We'll get to that now in the Gemara. There are, by the way, a couple of Rishonim who say that nowadays that you don't have Aliyah L'Regel, because there's no Beis Mikdash, then maybe in Eretz Yisrael they should start asking for rain. They should start saying Talamata right after Sukkot. However, most Rishonim disagree with that, and the Ran gives a reason, because even after the Churban, people were often still Aliyah L'Regel. People would still come to Yerushalayim to be as close as possible to the Beis Mikdash for the Yom Tovim, even though there's no actual Chiyuv of Aliyah L'Regel during that time. Therefore, we still stick to that. And by the way, I mean, in various places, it mentions that Eretz Yisrael is 400 by 400 parasa. So the Ritva points out, in that case, given that the average person traveled 10 parsa a day, that should mean it should take 20 days to get to the border of Eretz Yisrael, if we assume that Yerushalayim is in the middle of the country. So why are we saying only 15 days? He says, because on the other hand, we tell those Oyle Regel, you know what? You also have an obligation to hurry up, travel a little faster than normal, so that the Jews of Eretz Yisrael can already start asking for rain, which they need so much. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Elazar, halacha k'Rav Gamliel. So the halacha is like Rav Gamliel, that in Eretz Yisrael, you start saying Talmud Matar and Zayin Cheshvan. Tanya, now we learn in a Braisa, Hananya Omer, Uva Goyla, in the Goyla, which is Babel, Ad Shishim B'Tkufa, we wait until the 60th day of the Tkufa. So now, let's figure out what that means. You have those four Tkufas in the year. For this purpose, we use what's called Tkufas Shmuel, which says that the year is exactly 365 days and 6 hours. We use that for other purposes as well, for example, Birkas Chama. Now, in Shmuel's times, that it came out that Tkufas Tishrei was on September 24th or September 24th or sometimes 5th. Now, if there used to be the common Goyish calendar was called the Julian calendar. It followed exactly that method. According to that, 60 days from that would come out to November 22nd, or in the year before a secular leap year, it would come out to November 23rd. So Rishonim, who talk about this, in their times, that's what it was, and they give a simon for it. The pasuk says, B'cha Yevorech Yisrael, B'cha is Chof Beis, 22. So that helps you remember that on Chof Beis, on the 22nd of November, is when you begin saying Talmud Matar. Now, what happened? Eventually, the Goyim realized that calculation is not really accurate. The Tkufos and the various seasons and whatnot are moving out of place, because that calculation is about 11 minutes too long per year. So it adds up to about a day every 120 odd years. It goes off. So eventually, over a period of hundreds of years, it got to be a couple of weeks off. So they finally created, in the late 1500s, they created what's called the Gregorian calendar, which is the calendar we use, the secular calendar we use nowadays. One thing they did is they dropped 10 days from one of the years over there, and they also made different rules, slightly different rules as far as leap years. So the result of that is 10 days means it was moved from November 22nd to December 2nd. And then, because of this matter of leap years, because 3 out of every 400 years are not leap years in the current system, whereas in the old calendar, in the Julian calendar, they were, therefore, at the end of most centuries, it moves forward another day. So the result is that we get to where nowadays, where we start Talmud Matar the night after December 4th, and in a year before Goyish leap year, we start it on the night before December 5th. And the reason why we have it a day later in that one, by the way, is because in that year, the year before secular leap year, Shmuel's Tkufa is going to be at 9 o'clock at night on whatever day in Tishrei or Cheshvan. So that means, in other words, it's already the next Jewish day. So therefore, so 60 days from that, then is going to be one day later. So that's where we get the dates that we have now. Eventually, come the year 2100, then it's going to shift forward one day, and then it'll be December 5th and 6th, respectively, and over time it gradually shifts later and later. That's the Inyan B'Kitzur Nimratz. I saw an interesting vote in that connection from Yona Mertzbach, who was a distinguished Rav in Germany and afterwards in Eretz Yisrael. So why on earth do we say 60 days from the Tkufa? He says, because symbolically, the idea is, we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, that when Rosh Chodesh Kislev comes and rain hasn't fallen yet in Eretz Yisrael, then they start fasting. Rosh Chodesh Kislev is 60 days into the new year. Therefore, symbolically, they wanted to make, and of course, it's also, it should be 60 days from the beginning, so to speak, of the secular year, namely Tkufas Tishrei. So we do that. Omer of Huna Bachia, Omer Shmuel, Halacha Kachananya. So the Halacha is like Hananya, so that's when you begin. So the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? Bo mi name is Shmuel. They asked Shmuel, Me'emas matkirin in the same Talmud Matar. At what point we start saying the same Talmud Matar? Omer lahu, when he says to them, the Kima Eilit Sivi lebe Tavos Rishva, when they start bringing wood into the house of Tavos Rishva. So Rashi explains that Rishba, Tavos was the guy's name. Rishba means a person who made nets to trap, a bird trapper. Rishba means a type of net that you use to trap birds. So Shmuel is telling the people, when you see them bringing wood into his house, then you know it's time to start saying the same Talmud Matar. On the side of it, he brings an explanation from the Aruch, rather, that the word Rishva is short for Resh Beis Abba. So it means, in other words, he was the head of his household. He was an important person. Anyway, so the Chora, that's not the same thing as Hananya. And the Gemara says, no problem. They could very well be the same thing. When they start bringing wood into his house, they started doing that on the 60th day from Tkufas Tishrei. And therefore, that's the day when you start the same Talamata. An interesting point, by the way, that a couple of Achronim bring up is, we learned earlier in the Perek, that when it comes to starting to say Mashiv Ruach Moed Geshem, or Moed Atol for that matter, we don't start it in Mairiv, because not everybody is in Shul, we brought from the Yerushalmi, because not everybody is in Shul, and we don't start in Shachris either, because people are going to mistakenly think it was started in Mairiv, we wait till Musa. Why with the same Talamata are we not doing that? Why do we start at night? And there's a couple of interesting answers. One of them is, look, we already have, when it comes to the same Talamata, different places are starting different times. There's Yisrael one place, Chutzlar is a different place, so we already have a division between people. So there's no problem if some people are going to be starting by night and other people are not going to realize because they're not in shul by night and they're only going to start the next morning. It doesn't matter that much. And another reason that the Magen Avraham, the Cheshek Shloimeh, gives another reason. He says, listen, on a day when you have Musaf, sure, you should start in Musaf. But on a day, on a regular weekday, what's the good of starting by, you're going to say you should start by Mincha? Not everybody necessarily is in shul on Mincha on a weekday either. So you might as well start by Ma'ariv. So now we have the question, Yom Shishim Kilifne Shishim or Kila'achar Shishim? The 60th day itself, is it similar to the days before it, so you still say the same bracha, or is it similar to the days after it? In other words, you start on the 60th day, or do you start after 60 days on the 61st day? So Toshma, Rav Omer Yom Shishim Kila'achar Shishim, Rav says the 60th day itself is the day that you start. It's like the days after it. Or Shmuel Ami Yom Shishim Kalifne Shishim. Shmuel says it's like the days before it. So according to Shmuel, you begin one day later, the 61st day. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok V'Simanach. So Rav Nachman Yitzchok says a simon to remember which one said which. Eloi Bo Maya Tatoi Eloi Bo Maya. Think of you would realize in day to day experience, people living on higher elevation need more rain. People on lower elevation don't, because like we just said about Bavel, they get the overflow themselves from the higher level. So what does that mean? So Rav was from Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael Gvoya Mikol Ha'aretz. Therefore, that helps us remember that Rav moved up the day by one day, as opposed to Shmuel, who was from Bavel and lived almost his whole life in Bavel, which is lower lying, we said before. So therefore, like symbolically, he needs it only later. So therefore, he delays it by a day. A different explanation that some of the Mephoshim say is that within Bavel itself, Rav lived in Sura, which is Rav lived in Sura. Shmuel lived in Nahadah, where Nahadah is on a lower level than Sura, and therefore that also helps us remember. Therefore, that Rav is moving up the date, whereas Shmuel is moving it further. The halacha is the 60th day itself is like the days after it. So on the 60th day itself is when you start saying Talamata. The post can give a simon for it. If you have, for example, let's say the tekufa was on Sunday, then the day that you're going to start asking for rain is 60 days later on a Wednesday. It's going to be 3 days later in the week. A way to remember that is the phrase in the pasuk, the Eid Yalam in Aref, that a vapor, a cloud, came up from the earth, which we mentioned before on Tesim and Beis. So that helps us remember that's associated with rain. So it helps us remember Aleph Dalid, that if, for example, the Tekufa is on Sunday, then we start Talamata on Wednesday, which is to say on Tuesday night. So always 3 days in the week later. Now, there is a very interesting point in this, Bechlal. What about in countries? Now the question is, what do we do in the rest of Chutz Laaretz? So Rashi just says flat out, listen, we always follow Bnei Bavel and Halacha. Therefore, this also, we follow their timetable rather than Eretz Yisrael's. On the other hand, there's a very famous thing where the Rosh disagreed with that. So the Rosh said that the Rosh was born in Germany, spent the first half of his life there. Eventually, he escaped from there and wound up in Spain. So he writes in a tshuva. he writes in a tshuva that one year, a few years after he had come to Spain, there was a terrible drought. And he was sitting together with some of the other Chachamim of that time, and they were discussing. He was saying, you know what? I don't think that we should have to be following the timetable of Babel when it comes to saying Talmud Mutter. That was good for them. Like we said in the Gemara, they're very low-lying. They have plentiful rain. They have plentiful rain, and they're very humid and moist and whatever. They don't need rain any earlier in the season than this. But in other places, why shouldn't we? And he says, for example, in Germany, for example, they really need rain even during Sukkot, because that's when they plant. And they need rain during the time after Pesach as well. Why shouldn't they be davening for rain during that time? And he says when I passed through Provincia, which is Provence, the south of France, I found that actually their minhag is to start on Zayin Cheshvan, like they do in Eretz Yisrael. And I was I thought that's a good idea. So now also he's saying every country should be able to determine their own time that they need to save it, that they need to say Talmud Mutter and Masha Baruch Amar Negeshet. The upshot was that all the other Chachamim of that time, though, they heard what he said, but they still disagreed and said, we're not going to start doing that. There is, by the way, a Gemara that's relevant to this later on, Daf Yudalad, where the Gemara is going to say that we have, let's say, a city like Nineveh that needs rain at specific times. They still, if they want, they can ask for it in the Baruch Hashemayach Tefillah, but they can't change the actual Nusach of davening. So now, you could argue that Rosh says, okay, Nineveh is one thing, it's only one city, it's different when it's a whole country. Nevertheless, his opinion was not accepted by Halacha. And therefore, so that's how it is, that even if you have a country where they need rain other times during the year, or where it's not good to ask for rain a certain time of year, nevertheless, they still say the Nusach like everybody else does. And then if they need to ask for rain in a time when it's not the Nusach, then they can ask for it in Shemayah Tefillah. One thing you have that does mention in Shulchan Aruch that there is an opinion that says that nevertheless, even though the Rosh's opinion wasn't accepted by Halacha, it is accepted to the extent that we say that in such places, if a person does say the wrong thing at the wrong time of year, maybe he doesn't need to repeat Shemana Esrei. So in Shulchan Aruch it says in that case, because of the suffix, whether you should or not, then you should daven at Tfilas Nedava. Then you have a whole nother question that came up once Jews began settling in the southern hemisphere, where the seasons are the opposite, of ours. So in fact, the very first Shaila that ever came from the Western Hemisphere to any Rav was a question from a community in Brazil in the 1600s, where they had exactly that question. So they sent their question to a Rav in Salonika named Rav Chaim Shabtai, and he responded. He responded essentially like that. You can't start changing the Nusach. You can't start flipping things around. However, you don't. So fine. He says, so don't ask for rain any time during the year, because look, in your countries, the times in the northern hemisphere when you need rain are not the ones where you need rain by you. It'll be harmful for you. As far as your rainy season, that's when the northern hemisphere is saying that your rainy season is the northern hemisphere summer, and we're saying Merud Atol. Very well, he told them. So you're going to say Merud Atol and the same bracha throughout the whole year. Then, during the times of year when you need rain, ask for it in Shemayah Tefillah. That remained the normative psak halacha for a couple hundred years until there was a rav in Australia in the 1890s who brought this point up again. He said, on the other hand, you know, I mean, the question of that kehillah and the Maharash's answer was based on the idea that rain during the rest of the year is harmful, that rain during what should be their dry season is harmful. Maybe that's valid in Brazil. It's certainly not valid in Australia, he said. They could use rain anytime during the year. So he wrote to a bunch of rabbanim of that time, and many of them agreed with him that in fact, during half of the year, what they should do, in other words, these rabbanim said, go ahead, in the southern hemisphere, they should do exactly the same timetable as in the northern hemisphere. Start saying Talmud Mutter on December 4th or 5th. Start saying Vesein Bracha on Pesach. And again, if you need rain and on some other time of the year, then ask for it Shemei Akpila, but don't do, they were saying, not like the Maharash was saying, that not like the Chaim Shabsei was saying, that you're never going to say the same bracha, that you're never going to say the same Talmud Mutter or Masha Baruch Amar Negeshet. So some kehillahs switched to that. Then there was the Shevet HaLevi about 60 years ago, came up with a chiddush. He said, maybe look what it is, I mean, even fine, nobody agreed with the Rosh, but that was when they were all in the northern hemisphere. Nowadays, you have people in the southern hemisphere. Why shouldn't they be able to follow their own timetable? Even the Chachamim who disagreed with the Rosh aren't going to say that the seasons have to be flipped around in the southern hemisphere. So he argued, maybe l'halacha, they should be able to. They should be saying Masha Baruch Merud Geshem from Pesach till Sukkot, and Merud Atol from Sukkot till Pesach. However, he says, L'maise is not going to pass in that way. Then there came, the next stage in that was in the early Mems, one time in the summer of Tufshin Mem Beis, the Rebbe spoke a sicha and talked about this and said, on the face of it, it seems that that position, the Shevet Alevi's position, seems very logical. Why should the southern hemisphere be tied to the timetable of the northern hemisphere? However, then the Rebbe had to clarify afterwards in a few different sichas that absolutely he was not saying halacha l'maisa that they should change. He's saying as a discussion in Torah, halacha l'maisa, he says, and the Rebbe took the step of in one of the Likutim, in one of the Likuta sichas that was going to be coming out shortly before it was time to start saying the same Talamater. He asked that they should put together a whole list of these sources, all these various sources in Sifrei Halacha of the last few hundred years, all the pros and cons of it, and let people be able to see for themselves what the various opinions are. So they did that. You can find that in Hisvaduyas Tufshin Mem Gimel in a long footnote at the end of one of the sichas over there. And the Rebbe said, continue following local minhag, don't start changing minhagim. After all, the Rebbe said, when to say talamotar is drabanan, to avoid machloikas is something daraisa. So let's not start making different minhagim and start creating machloikas over here. So the Maisa, that's how most people do then. So it seems that nowadays actually you have a difference in minhagim between Sfardim and Ashkenazim, according to that, because Sfardim would still follow Reb Chaim Shabtai, whereas Ashkenazim would follow those various other Rabbanim of the 1890s. So you have the question, is it that you're never saying the same Talamotar in those places, like Reb Chaim Shabtai had said, and you would only say during your rainy season, you would say the same Talamotar in Shemir Tefillah if you need it? Or is it that you say on exactly the same timetable as the Northern Hemisphere, so you start Talamotar on December 4th or 5th, and you start the same Bracha on Pesach, the same as the Northern Hemisphere does, which is how I think most people do it nowadays. Okay. The Mishnah says, Higia Yudzayim B'macheshvin V'lo Yodu B'shamim. If the 17th of Cheshvan came and rain has not started falling yet, and we said before that the 17th of Cheshvan is, according to one of the opinions over there, according to the mayor, was the latest expected time for the rain to even begin, then the Yechidim, which we're going to say in the Gemara, means like the Talmud Chachamim, start fasting three fasts. So they don't yet make a Zera on the Tzibur to fast, but the Yechidim themselves start fasting and davening to Hashem for rain. Now, these fasts are very lenient. They can eat and drink even after it became dark. These fasts are like Asara B'Tevis or Shiva Asa B'Tammuz or the rest of them, where the fast only begins at Alois HaShachar. They're allowed all the things that are allowed on other fasts as well. So they can do malacha, they can bathe, they can anoint themselves, they can wear shoes, and they can do Tashmash HaMikta. Next, if a Shchodesh Kislev comes and rain still hasn't fallen, based in Gozun Sholosh Taniyas Alat Tzibur, then based in will make three Taniyas that the Tzibur has to fast. Also, Ochlin Veshoysim Meshech HaShecha, these are also lenient fasts. They can eat and drink after nightfall until Alois Teshacha, Umutonin Memalacho Verchitzo Vesicho Venilach Hasano, over Tash Meshamikta. And on each of those fasts, they say they lay in Vayichal, and they lay in Vayichal, and they say Slichos, and so on and so forth, and they daven to Hashem for rain. So the Gemara asks, Man Yechidim, who are these Yechidim in the Mishnah? Amar Avuna Rabbanan, it means the Talmud Chachamim. But Amar Avuna, also Avuna says, Yechidim Mis'anin Shloisha Taniyas Sheni V'chamishi V'sheni. These Yechidim, their three fasts are Monday, Thursday, and Monday. So the Monday after Yud Zayin Cheshvan, and then the following Thursday and the following Monday. The Gemara says, "My Kamash Malan, what's Rav Huna's Chiddush? Tanena, we learn in a Mishnah in the next parak. Ein Gozrin Tainas Alat Tzibur B'Techila B'Chamishi. We never start a Tainas Tzibur. We never start a series of Tainas Tzibur on Thursday. Shaloi Lahatkiya Sasha'orim, in order not to cause a rise in prices. What does that mean? So there's a few different explanations. Rashi explains that if they start on Thursday, now what happens is people are going to be shopping on Thursday for food to break the fast. They're also often going to be doing their Shabbos shopping. Now, we learned the other day that many people do their Shabbos shopping on Friday, but a lot of people also do it on Thursday, as we have Adayim Azeh. So now what happens is So now the people who are selling food, they don't necessarily know in advance that a tinus was declared. So therefore, what's going to happen? They're going to see all of a sudden people are buying much more than normal on a Thursday. They're not going to realize it because of the fast and it's Shabbos. They're going to think that people are buying so much. It must be that they're going to think it must be that a famine is coming, and therefore people are stocking up, and therefore they're going to jack up the prices. So therefore, we don't want that. Therefore, we begin the fast on Monday. And by Thursday already, when people are shopping for Shabbos, they know that the reason people are buying extra is because of the fast, not because of that. Rabbi Gershom says a bit of a different explanation. He says the vote is that how do you have, where does the food in the stores come from? The farmers bring it from their farms, from the outlying villages. They're not going to know to bring enough. If the fasts are begun on Thursday, they're not going to know to bring enough for the extra amount that people are going to be buying. Therefore, that's going to cause prices to rise because you're going to have shortages. And the Ran says another reason is, the vote is, either way, there's probably going to be a rise in prices anyway, but at least we don't want, the covered in honor of Shabbos, we don't want that there should be a rise in prices right before Shabbos. So anyway, so we see from that you never start a series of fasts on Thursday. So what's Rav Huna's Chiddush? The Ela Shalosh Tanis, so the Mishnah continues, Ela Shalosh Tanis Rishonis, Sheni V'Chamishi V'Sheni. The first three fasts are always Monday, Thursday, Monday. Okay, you have Machlokes later on in the Mishnah, whether the later fasts can start on Thursday, but certainly the first series always begins on Monday. So what's Rav Huna's Chiddush? The answer is Ma'ud Teima Hani Milit Tzibur. Fine, but without Rav Huna telling us, we would have thought that only applies to the Tzibur. Avo Yachid Loi, maybe it doesn't apply to the individuals. Here we have only the Yachidim are fasting. Kamash Malan, therefore Rav Huna wants to tell us that even in that case, we only start the fast on Monday. Because again, you're going to have this, it won't be as severe, but there's still going to be this problem of course, Sha'arim of prices rising. Gemara says Tanya Nami Hachi. We learn similarly in a Braisa. When the Yechidim start fasting, Misanin Sheni v'Chamishi v'Sheni, they fast Monday, Thursday, Monday. Umafsikin b'Rosh Chodeshim. Now they break for Rosh Chodesh. If Rosh Chodesh comes out on one of these fast days, then they stop. They don't fast on that day. Instead, they fast the next occasion. So let's say, for example, Rosh Chodesh Kislev comes out on a Monday. So instead, they're going to have fasted Monday and Thursday. They're skipping that Monday because it's Rosh Chodesh. And the next one they're fasting is Thursday. So they break for that. They also break their fast for the days that are written in Megillas Tainis, which we learned about in Rosh Hashanah. You have a catalog of a couple dozen days throughout the year when good things happen to the Jewish people during the time of the second Mishnah. And the Chachamim said you're not allowed to fast on them, and some of them you're not allowed to make a spadim on. So therefore, if one of those days falls out on a Monday or Thursday when there was supposed to be a tainis, then also you postpone the tainis. Nowadays, we learned in Rosh Hashanah, Machloikas, and we said the halacha was that Batla Megillas Tainis, that for the most part, the Yom Tov and Megillas Tainis are no longer in effect, except for Chanukah and Purim. So therefore, if you have any of these other, if a fast comes out on any of these other days, then you go ahead and fast it. There's no such thing as that you keep it because it says in Megillas Tainis. Okay. More about this matter of the Yechidim. Tanan Abanan. Al Yoima Adam Talmud Ani. A person should never say, listen, I'm only a Talmud. I'm not one of the Yechidim. Eini Roy Lias Yachid. I'm not worthy of being a Yachid and fasting in one of these first fasts. No. Ela Koltam and Chachamim Yechidim. All students of the Chachamim, literally Talmid Chachamim, mean we always think of Talmid Chachamim as being the actual the great people themselves. Really, Talmid Chachamim literally means the Talmidim of the Chachamim. In other words, you have the Chachamim, the higher level ones, and then you have their Talmidim. So every Talmid of a Chacham is a Yachid and should be fasting on those days. So Ezehu Yachid veEzehu Talmid. So what is the definition? What's the distinction between a Yachid and a Talmid? A Yachid is kosher roi lamanoise parnas al tzibur. A Yachid is someone who's of the caliber that they could set him up. They could appoint him as a parnas, as a leader of the community. Which means, in other words, that he knows the Torah thoroughly. Talmud is kosher shoy lanoise dvar halacha belimud veomer. A Talmud is defined as when they ask him something in the halachas that he learned and he's able to answer it, veomer, and he's able to say v'afilu b'masechta kala, even if it's only masechta kala, which there's a couple of possibilities what that means. Masechta kala is one of the masechta tanis and it's fairly short and easy. So even if all he knows is that's enough for him to be considered a Talmud. Or masechta kala can also mean the masechta that they taught at the yarche kala twice a year. So it's like it's the current masechta that they're learning. Or related to that also, it can mean the Masechta, that they're teaching of the halachas of Yom Tov 30 days before Yom Tov. So even if he only knows that, that already makes him worthy of being called a Talmud. Tosfos discusses over here a little bit about different points about that, that there can be, you have, for example, within Talmidim itself, there's a distinction between, for example, that if the Rav knows how to answer all the Talmidim, even if it's in a different topic than they've been learning, then that's a Yochid greater than a Talmud, whereas then you have the kind of Talmud who only knows how to answer in one particular area of Torah. So that's the difference between Yochid and Talmud. The Tanan Rabbanon, we learn in a Braisa, Loi kol haroitza lasas atma yochid oise. Not everybody who wants to make himself a yochid is worthy of doing that. So not like we said before, that a person shouldn't say, I'm a Talmud, I'm not a yochid. This Braisa is saying that if he wants to say, I'm a yochid, I'm going to fast, he shouldn't necessarily do that. Talmud oise, but if he wants to say that he's on the level of a Talmud, that he can do. Divrei Meir. And the reason is, Rashi says that if he claims that he's a yochid and is worthy of being one of the ones who fasts on these days, then he's showing gasas haruach. And then, as you have the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, kol she'ein ruach habrias necha emenu, if people don't approve of him because he's acting like a gasas haruach, then Hashem doesn't approve of him either. So Hashem is not going to accept his tainus, so why should he bother? Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says, by all means, let him make himself like a yochid, and let him be remembered for good for doing that. Because he's not doing something that makes him, that's a praise for himself. He's doing something that's tzar. He's making himself fast where he wouldn't have to. Nothing wrong with that. That's not gasas haruach, he says. Rashi brings a second girsa, which he prefers, which is that you have not everybody who wants to make himself a yochid could do that. But it's actually the first girsa that Rashi had was not everybody who wants to make himself a yochid should do that, but the Talmidim should make themselves like yochidim. And Rabbi Yossi says anybody who wants to make themselves like a yochid could. So it would come out according to that there were three divisions. In other words, you have the yochidim have to fast, the Talmidim could fast if they want to, and everybody else, you have a machlokas Rav Meir and Rav Yossi, whether they should fast. And then you have Rashi brings a second girsa, which is the girsa that we have in front of us in the Gemara, that if a person wants to make himself a yochid, he shouldn't, because it would be gasas haruach. But if he wants to make himself a Talmud, in other words, to act like a Talmud Chacham would, where he dresses a certain way and makes sure his table is set a certain way, and so on and so forth, so he could do that. And also not if he wants to make himself a Talmud and act that way. Rav Meir says he shouldn't do that, because again, it would be gasas haruach. And Rav Yossi is saying that when it comes to being a yochid, as far as fasting, even if you're not a Talmud, go ahead and act like a yochid if you want. It's tzar, it's not a shevach, therefore it's not gasas haruach. But I agree, Rav Yossi would be saying, if you're not a Talmud and you want to act like a Talmud and you can be dressing and so forth like a Talmud Chacham, you shouldn't be doing that unless you're actually on that level. So it would come out according to that. In other words, there'd be four divisions. You have the regular people, the Talmud. You have the regular people, the Talmidim, the Yechidim, and then the Talmud Chachamim. Yeah. Okay. Tanya Idach, we learn in another Braisa. Loi kol haroitza lasas atma yochid oise. Not everybody who wants to make himself a yochid and again fast on these first three fasts can do. Talmud oise. But if he wants to make himself like a Talmud, which again we said maybe means that he's going to dress like a Talmud Chacham, for example, oise, then he can do that. Divrei Reb Shimon Elazar. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer B'medron Amurim. When is that talking about? B'davar shel shvach. Only when it's something of praise, then he should be careful not to act like a yochid, because it's showing gaiva. But if it's a matter of tzar, then like Rabbi Yossi had said, oise, let him go ahead, and he'll remember for good, it's not a praise for him, it's a tzar, and if he wants to take that tzar on himself, he's going to hate. Whereas we said before, the mayor had said that not. We learn in a braisa, Mishahaya Mas'ana ala tzara va'avra. If a person was fasting because of a tzara and then the tzara went away, so the tzara is no longer a problem. That would be an example, yeah. Ala chol of an esrape, or he was fasting because of a sick person and now the person recovered. Or Rashi says the same thing would also be if the person passed away, but we'd rather mention the positive. Nevertheless, he still has to finish the fast. Now there are different opinions among the Rishonim on that, and there is, for example, I think the Ravid says that no, if the Chola passed away, then you don't have to continue your fast. Only if he recovered, then you should say, you know, what are you going to say? You know, okay, Hashem, you answered my tefillah, therefore I don't need to bother davening with you anymore. That wouldn't be right. So therefore, you need to continue. If a person travels from a place where they're not fasting to a place where they are fasting, and then he has to fast with them all the fast that they accepted on themselves. On the other hand, if he's going from a place where they are fasting to a place where they're not, then he still has to complete his fast because he accepted it on himself. If he forgot and ate and drank, you shouldn't show himself in front of the tzibur as that he's in a good mood and he ate. And he shouldn't act in a pleasurable way. He shouldn't say, in other words, I ate already. I broke my fast by mistake, so I might as well eat as much as I want. And there were different opinions among the Rishonim what all of this means exactly. Does it mean, for example, that he would be allowed to eat in private? Maybe, maybe not. So in Shulchan Aruch it says, ideally, then he shouldn't continue to eat. But if he's a weak person, for example, then he can be soimach on the opinions that understand Nor Gemara to be saying he just shouldn't be eating in front of the people who are fasting, but he can eat in private. What? This is we're talking about fast days that the tzibur accepted on themselves voluntarily. The regular fast days, like Shiva Asa Matamos and the rest of them, those have different demons. Right. We'll get to those later in the Masechta. That is still off the fast track. So where do we see that you shouldn't show off in front of people that you shouldn't show off in front of other people when they're suffering? Shenema Vayema Yaakov Levon of Lomot Yisro. As we find that Yaakov says to his children during the famine, Lomot Yisro, which means Omalam Yaakov Levon, Al Taru Atmachem Kratim Svein, don't show yourselves as that you're full, that you have plenty of food. Loi b'fnei Esav, loi b'fnei Yishmael, not in front of Esav or Yishmael. Kadesh lei skanu b'chem, so they don't get jealous of you. There is a good deal of discussion among the Mefarshim why Yaakov is mentioning b'nei Esav and b'nei Yishmael. What about the people of Canaan? They're living in Canaan. Why isn't he worried about the reaction of the people of Canaan? And there's a half dozen different answers that Mefarshim give on it. There's a sicha in Chelik Lamed, I think, where the Rebbe talks about the idea that what it is the Shvatim were taking the view, unlike Avraham and Yitzchak, who when there was a famine in Eretz Yisrael, they decided they have to go to Mitzrayim. We don't feel we have to do that. We feel that we're on a level of betachon where we can stay in Eretz Yisrael and Hashem will provide for us. And Yaakov is telling them, yeah, but if you do that, then B'nai Esav and B'nai Yishmael are going to start saying, what makes you think you're better than our common ancestors, Avraham and Yitzchak, where they left Eretz Yisrael during famine, and you think you don't need to. So it's going to cause a kitru, in other words. Since we're mentioning something in connection with that story, where Yaakov tells them Lomot Yisro and therefore go to Mitzrayim and buy food, so the Gemara digresses to talk about something else on their way back from Mitzrayim the second time, where Yosef tells them Al Tirgazu Badorech, literally means don't get angry on the way. So what does he mean by that? So Amar Abulazar, Amar Lahem Yosef Lachav, Altis Asku B'dvar Halacha, don't get deeply involved in matters of Halacha, in discussions of Halacha, Shema Tirgzor Aleichem Aderech, Aleichem Aderech, because the road might get angry at you and you're going to get lost. You're going to get so far tiffed in your discussion of Torah that you're going to lose your way. So the Gemara says, Eini, is that so? You're telling me he's saying they shouldn't learn Torah on the way? Well, Amar Rabbeloi Babrechia, Shnei Tamar Chachamim Shema Halchem Baderech, two Tamar Chachamim who are walking together on the road, the Ein Beinein Divrei Torah, and they're not talking Torah between them, Ru'uyim Li Sarif, they deserve to be burnt. Shenemar, you have the pasuk in connection with Eliyahu and Elisha, right before Eliyahu was taken up to Shemayim, by he Hema Hochem Holech B'daber, they were going, Eliyahu and Elisha are walking together and talking. Behold, there was a fiery chariot and horses of fire by Afridu ben Shneim, and they separated between them, and the chariot took Eliyahu Anovi up the Shemayim. So time the Ikadibur. So the implication is because they were talking in Torah, therefore they didn't both get burned. Ha Lekadibur, but if they hadn't been talking in Torah, Ru'uyin Li Sarif. And the implication is that fiery chariot and horses would have burnt them both up. Tosfos actually brings from a medrash that it's the other way around. They were talking Dvarim B'Teilim, and therefore they deserve to be burned. Which is what the pasuk is implying. Yeah, by the way, what do you mean? Devarim b'teilim, I mean Eliyahu and Elisha. I mean, we're talking Devarim b'teilim. So there is an interesting explanation. It means that he was telling him how a man of Israel needs to act, but relative to them. That's Devarim b'teilim, because Elisha is going to be the Navi of the Jewish people. He's not going to be the king or the Nasi or something. So he doesn't necessarily need to know these things on that level. That could be considered Devarim b'teilim. Anyway, so the point is, we see that Adarav, Tamar HaChamim, who are traveling together, have to talk in Torah. The answer is like Kasha, hold a migras holy uni. There's a difference between girsa, between learning on a superficial level, versus liyuni, getting into deeper. So to do the migras, by all means, you have to do that on the road. But something where you need iyun, where you need to delve into it, that not, because you're likely to lose your way. Tosfos brings over here from a medrash al tafsiku midbar halacha, that on the contrary, Yosef is telling them, don't interrupt from words of halacha. There is, first of all, there's a Magen Avraham that says that this would only apply if you yourself, if you're walking or if you're driving or whatever, but if you're in a carriage being driven by somebody else, for example, then he says, by all means, go ahead and do Iyun Halacha. You're not the one who has to know the way anyway. The carriage driver is. There's a Sikha in Chelek Lamed Hei where the Rebbe analyzes this whole thing, a very lumdish Sikha, about all the pros and cons of these different opinions of what Yosef was telling them and the Migras versus the Uni and so forth. One thing that Rebbe points out over there is we can understand the Chiyuv to learn Torah on the road in two different ways. We can understand there's a general mitzvah to learn Torah, and it includes a Valachtach Laderech, or you could have there's a specific one when you're traveling, because it can be dangerous on the roads, therefore you need learning Torah for the special purpose of protecting you. And in the Sikha, the Rebbe discusses over there how that fits with our Gemara versus that Medrash, that Tosfos is bringing, and so on and so forth. Okay, b'masnisetana. In a brisa, we learn a different version of what Yosef was telling them by telling them al tirgiz b'adorach, al tafsiu psiagasa. Don't take large steps. Vachnisu chamala ir and go into the city on your way home. Whenever you're stopping in a city for the night, go in while it's still light outside. So al tafsiu psiagasa. When he tells them not to go with large steps, why not? Da'omamar psiagasa. And tell us echa mechamesh meesmer. Because we learn in a braisa that large steps take away 1/500th of a person's vision. Tosfos asks, so what does that mean? After 500 large steps, a person's going to be blind? So they go through a couple of possibilities. One is that it means the first one takes away 1/500th. The second one takes away 1/500th of what's left, and so on and so forth. So each time it's a progressively smaller amount. Or Tosfos says what it means is that only the first step causes that. Afterwards, the person is used to it, so therefore the second and third and so forth steps aren't going to have the same effect, but nevertheless, each time a person starts going, it's going to have that effect one time. And also, Tosfos says that maybe only kolas cholas koshes, all beginnings are hard, so only the first one, so that's another reason why only the first one would have that effect. By the way, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that Kiddush on Shabbos helps restore that 500th that was lost. And also it's brought in some places looking at the Shabbos candles during Kiddush, because you have two neiris, neir is gematria 250, twice that is 500, so that corresponds to the 500 that we're saying over here. And vachnisu chamalair, why is he telling them to go into the city while there's still light in the sky, while the sun is still in the sky? Kiddush Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, this is like what Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rab, the Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, la'olam yetzer adam b'kitoy v'ikones b'kitoy. A person should always leave the city while it's kitov, meaning while it's still daylight, be konis be kitov, and come in while it's still daylight, by yare lakim asa ur kitov. Shenema ha boker ur, the pasuk says only when the morning was light, vaha nashim shulcho, and the men, Yosef's brothers, were sent away, so we see that they only left after it was light in the sky. You have the different reasons for it, because you have during the nighttime you have robbers, and during the nighttime you're more likely to fall into pits and other things like that on the road. And also Rashi says another thing, they might falsely accuse him. If he comes into the city at night, or he leaves the city at night, they're likely to know you're a thief, you're a spy, or whatever, what are you doing out at night? So like this, going about by day and then coming in by day avoids all those problems. There's actually a story in the Medrash in that connection where there was this innkeeper, the Medrash says, who used to, he had a whole scam going. He would have, when people stayed at his inn, he would have the people get up in the middle of the night and offer, you know, I'll walk you a little the way. This way you can get a head start on your trip. And then on the way, he'd meet up with his co-conspirators, the robbers, and they would steal everything they had, and he'd pretend like he himself, like, oh yeah, I didn't know we got into a place of robbers, etc. And then he'd divide up the loot with them. One time, the Medrash said, Rav Meir stayed at this inn. He realized what the guy was up to. So when the guy comes in the middle of the night to wake him up, Rav Meir says, I'm waiting for my brother. What's your brother's name? Kitov. Where will I find him? In shul. So the guy goes to the shul and starts yelling, Kitov, your brother Meir is waiting for you. Nothing doing. Eventually it's light, and of course the whole plan falls apart. So and Rav Meir explains to him, that's the Kitov I'm talking about. My Yara Kima. So Kitov, I was waiting until it got light because I realized what kind of shenanigans you're up to. Okay, everyone.